Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara I gcuir na meáin an cheistin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar na reachtam. Iadach sé tarrin gribhan ar chur san I lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin áon tar dorach sa sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Kerry couldn't go as All-Ireland champions playing, you know, out-and-out blanket defence against Mayo in the backyard. You know, that would have been very anti-Kerry. They had to play on the front foot and go with a bit of confidence. But they just met a team in Mayo on Saturday who were just better than them and fitter than them and faster than them on the day, and that would give, you know, Jack O'Connor a lot of food for thought.
The All-Ireland round-robin series is up and running, and it kicked off with a bang on Saturday with Mayo handing Kerry a shock defeat in Killarney. It's the All-Ireland champions' first home championship defeat since 1995 and served as another reminder that this is one of the most open Sam Maguire races we've ever had. Welcome to the Throw In Football Show. Will Slattery here with Dick Clerkin and Colm Keyes to discuss all the weekend's action. And Dick, it might be a little premature to say that Saturday's result in Killarney gives the new format, you know, a shot in the arm considering it was day one, but a lot of people did have questions about maybe the level of jeopardy considering only four teams will be eliminated after these 24 group matches. But even by Kerry losing, the champions, the favourites, and now being put on this kind of long route to potentially winning another title, it just maybe sharpens the focus a bit for some of the other matches and for some of the other bigger teams that a loss can still be very inconvenient if you don't get your, you know, kind of stuff right.
Now that teams have moved past the provincial stage and the sort of the new, especially the likes of Kerry, who probably were never going to get much out of their province, what they want now is form. Like, even in the last couple of weeks, the weather's improved, the ground's hardening, it's proper championship season, and you're now looking at a sort of a pathway to the All-Ireland series and knockouts. And you want form. You want there's no more excuses about a sort of a soft provincial championship and undercooked, all this sort of stuff. You've had long enough to have your training up to speed. And I'd say on that basis, Jack O'Connor would be a bit concerned because he probably would have felt that they were in better fettle than they definitely showed against Mayo. And maybe that's probably been unfair to Mayo, who have looked very good all year. The game against Roscommon, because of the conditions and the nature of it, maybe it was a bit of an exception as opposed to the norm, because Mayo really have been at a good pitch all year, and again they brought that to Killarney on Saturday. So Mayo are back up to where we thought they were, and the Roscommon was a bit of a blip. Kerry now, there's a bit of a question mark, but maybe they just met a team that are just a wee bit further down the tracks in terms of physicality, conditioning, and the style of play that Mayo played. Very, very nice to watch. Very, very easy on the eye in terms of the way they sort of kicked the ball, used the full dimensions of the pitch, something that was very, you'd almost say, Kerry-esque, and then not being able to sort of match that would probably be a bit of a concern for Kerry. So, as I say, Kevin McStay, like he's done all year, that's another feather in the cap for him, and they'll click on to the next game full of confidence.
Yeah, Colm, like from how the game unfolded on Saturday, how significant do you think the team's run-ins were? Like, so Mayo obviously hadn't played since the start of April. They've been able to work on things behind closed doors, or, you know, both in training and challenge games. Kerry had some very one-sided provincial contests, and obviously we're still training away as well, but two different routes. How significant do you think that kind of was and how the game played out?
I think the first thing, it was very, very difficult for Mayo to bounce out of Croke Park after winning the league, a national title. It's not something, you know, historically Mayo have won quite a few leagues, but it's not something for them to just dismiss and park. There had to be a little bit of euphoria of just closing off that part of the season. And by the time you get, and this is a point Kevin McStay made last week when he addressed the local media, by the time you get back up to Mayo, you know, you've the travel involved, the overnight in Dublin, everything around that. And suddenly the Roscommon game is on top of you. And they've had a couple of weeks to sit this out and watch what's going on. So there was a little bit of an ambush there in that Roscommon game. But I always felt, given the nature of the draw, that Mayo had in Connacht, having to play Roscommon, and then if they had won that, Galway, and a Connacht final against Sligo. It was always going to be difficult to win the league, win Connacht, and pursue those All-Ireland ambitions, which are the biggest thing for Mayo. Let's face it, winning a Leinster Cup, a Connacht title, is not going to be the biggest deal this year. So they took a pause, and they took 2 weeks off, and then they steadily rebuilt. And you could see it in some of their more athletic players. And I'll name them: Matthew Ruan, Dermot O'Connor, Jordan Flynn. There's three players that were really at it in the early stages of the league. And if you remember the Kerry and Tyrone games that they played at home on successive or close to successive Saturday nights in the middle of the league, and they were really in top form in those two games. And there was a little bit of a dip after that. And those three players in particular, and they're very athletic around that middle third for bring a lot of energy and a lot of legs to Mayo's play. And that's really a lot of what it's predicated on, is how Mayo have played, not just under this management, but even more so in the past. There's a good bit more kicking, I have to say, in the Mayo team this year, an ambition to kick the ball a little bit longer, mix it up more. But that high energy game is still there, and it's reflected through those three players. And I felt, by and large, they were back last Saturday. And I thought Ruan especially brought energy. So I think, all told, the six-week break, of all the teams it was going to suit Mayo, because they are such a high-octane team. Now, obviously, Derry have played three games, and they've come through the Ulster, a pretty tough Ulster championship. They had to play Monaghan in a semi-final and go to extra time. So maybe the opposite of what I'm saying will be disproved. Maybe Derry will disprove what I'm trying to say about the break. But I do think, given the schedule and the nature of everything, it's going to be difficult to win every competition. And I think Mayo have benefited. They've put themselves now on a very steady path that will give them 2 week breaks between all their games. If they continue to win and they top the group, there's a schedule there now from now to the end of July. If they keep winning, it's 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. They won't, if they win the group, obviously, they won't be in that second and third place playoff, which would mean playing 3 weeks in a row, which is high attrition, really puts a stress on squads. So they have the schedule. So the benefit of winning that game is obvious for their long-term ambitions. And I always felt, of all teams, it was going to benefit them. And I think it has.
Yeah, and the flip side now is true for Kerry. They have to potentially play 3 weeks in a row if they keep, winning their remaining group games. And then they'll be playing a group winner in the quarterfinals, which, you presume would be one of the big guns in the competition, which is quite early in the championship for maybe Kerry to be playing one of those traditionally. Dick, you mentioned Mayo's style, how easy on the eye it was on Saturday. I think a lot of people were surprised with how open Kerry were, because their defensive solidity has been the hallmark of, the second or the third tenure of Jack O'Connor, with Paddy Talley there as well. They, I think, only conceded one championship goal last year, and Mayo only did score one goal of the weekend, but it could have been two or three if it wasn't for Shane Ryan in goal. Did that surprise you?
Probably does. And you see, you probably find a lot of teams now and it was just noticed a few times in the tackle and the Mayo players, like James Carr, it was a bit of old school. I'm just going to take my man on here. If you look at an awful lot of games, especially up here, when the forward gets the ball, the instinct is to turn left or back. And that becomes a very comfortable place for a defender to be, not knowing that someone's going to come at you and you can just sort of mark space. And, Mayo just turned up in Killarney, and it was just, by and large, a lot of the scores and the highlights, just seeing them taken. And defenders don't get an awful lot of experience of that. Unless they're doing it in the training ground, a lot of the games that they play, they don't encounter that. So it can be very difficult for defenders to just quickly switch on and say, right, God, I have a man coming at me one-on-one. I haven't experienced it. Usually it's just, you're scanning it in front of you, you're getting men behind, and you've got time to get the bodies behind. A lot of Mayo's attacks there, Kerry just hadn't time to get back. They were so quick off the foot. And as Colin referenced, the athleticism of the Mayo players, when they got that yard in front, Kerry just couldn't get them back, and very few players in the country are going to get them back, because they're on the top of the ground, they're fit, they're athletic. McLaughlin's goal was a key point in case. He just got that yard in front, and there was nobody going to catch him. So that just bit of positivity, front foot football that Mayo played. To be honest with you, there's very few teams at the minute would be conditioned enough to play with that, Kerry just certainly weren't able to counter it. Now, the only thing is, they're forewarned now. you know, and this is sort of the pros and cons of the new system. If that had been old school championship football or a quarter final at Kerry gone, good chance you're going to see these teams maybe in the last floor, and that there's a good chance they could encounter each other again. And Mayo, you know, their card will be marked. And it's probably no surprise if you think Mayo's best games, and Mayo generally have tried to play this type of football over the years, and that's why they've been so enjoyable to watch. And it's no surprise that their best performances were against Dublin, who are another team give you space to play. They play up the pitch, they give space in behind, and if you want to have a cut at them, they let you do it. And Mayo do that. And Kerry, and in fairness, Kerry couldn't go as All-Ireland champions playing, you know, out and out blanket defence against Mayo in their backyard. You know, that would have been very anti-Kerry. They had to play on the front foot and go with a bit of confidence. But they just met a team in Mayo on Saturday who were just better than them and fitter than them and faster than them on the day. And that'll give, you know, Jack O'Connor a lot of food for thought.
Colm, are Kerry still the All-Ireland favourites for you? Have they lost that mantle now that not only losing, you know, to Mayo, but also having to go down that longer, more difficult route to potentially win it?
They're certainly wounded, Will. And I feel all year, Kerry, even during the league, haven't been bringing very much new from last year. And really, you know, you look at Dublin during their six in a row run, apart from maybe the last year, they were always bringing something new to it, whether it was a different style or an adjustment through the addition of a player like Con O'Callaghan. One year was Brian Howard. There was always something new with them coming. I haven't seen that with Kerry in the league, and I didn't see it last Saturday. You'd be very concerned around midfield for what Kerry used to have there in David Moore. And it's only you'll always yearn a player's departure when he's gone. But David Moore offered just a stability, and it was like if you equate it to rugby, it's like a throw to the front of the line out. You always knew, well, get it out to David Moran and there's a pretty good chance he'll hold it. He'll get it, he'll hold it, and he'll use it, and he'll give them go forward ball. They don't have Stephen O'Cunbar. Obviously, he could have brought something new, that defensive midfield presence that he was given. He took up Breen O'Neill in that league match during the in the league back in the spring, and he did really well in him. I just don't feel the thrust is there for the Kerry midfield. And that's why I think, as much as anything, they were beaten hands down there. I haven't seen a Kerry midfield beaten as badly. And that's not just the two guys who wear 8 and 9. I think it's a collective thing right across. I didn't see a lot of ball-winning power in the half-forward line as well to augment them in any way. It's not there. And that's a difficulty for them. They're going to come up against some pretty strong midfields. Obviously, Ruan, that axis, Ruan and Ruan and Jordan Flynn, Dermot O'Connor, and the other player that's been a real advance for Mayo is Jack Kearney, and he's gives a lot of support in that area. I don't see Kerry having that, and I think it's an area of difficulty for them, and that's why I think their defence was as stretch as anything, because they were under so much pressure. And I don't think Tadhg Morley, he made a good start, he got some blocks in, but I don't think Tadhg Morley is offering that same cover and presence that he did last year either. Now that will come, and Kerry will improve on the back of that. And I think they'll obviously win. I think they'll win their remaining two games, even though they have to go to Cork. I think they'll win their remaining two games and they will improve. But you know, they can't turn around and say, well, David Clifford was a bit off. He delivered one of his great performances last Saturday, and yet they were so far off. So it has to be a real concern for them. But I think their issues are around how they're not controlling the middle against the better teams. And obviously, that's obvious during the league, but also obvious last Saturday. But also, they're not really bringing anything new through, whether it's new ideas or new players. So all around a concern for Kerry.
As you mentioned, a trip to Cork is their next game, and they'll be big favourites, but it's set up to be a great atmosphere. If nothing else, Cork would love to potentially eliminate Kerry or certainly push them down an even more difficult path. Dick, obviously there was two kind of blockbuster games on Saturday. Galway-Tyrone as well didn't hit the same heights. I know the conditions were pretty poor there. Galway getting out on the right side of the result, you know, putting them on that kind of more straightforward path potentially if they can keep winning. What did you take from that game?
I think I mentioned it before. If I had to pick a team, and I did a couple of months ago, that I saw as a wee bit out in front of everyone, it was Galway. And again, Saturday evening was one of those sort of sticky, it was a wet day. You'd have thought Tyrone were coming down, you know, hurting from the Monaghan defeat. Like they're badly needing something to get their, not their season kicked off, but the last couple of years. And Galway just that bit better, bit stronger, wee bit more to offer. And obviously Tyrone's indiscipline cost them, but I would have felt that was a game that Galway just very, albeit almost professionally, just done what they had to do. I think they've got, you know, a very strong panel. You see Killian McDade coming back in now, kicking points. Comer, they're not depending on any one player like Kerry are in Clifford. And I think they're just steadily, they're just at the level that they need to be. And it was a case of job done. And Pádraig Joyce would have to be very, very happy. Like he's got, you know, a really, really strong panel, really, really strong spine. And it's hard to pick too many holes in them, to be honest with you. Like I seen them in the flesh in the league this year against Monaghan, and I was very impressed with them, just their physicality. And again, that sort of balance across defence, midfield. And, you know, I'm not saying it's an All-Ireland final and that Sam Maguire is theirs to lose, but I certainly have them up there now, at least in the top two teams in the country. And I say Saturday night was another shot in the arm for that. Tyrone, listen, it's case of, as you have been with Tyrone, there's glimpses there of the talent that they have, but they're just sort of struggling for any sort of consistency and discipline. Again, bad discipline reared its head again. And again, it's probably frustration. They're probably frustrated. They're all Ireland champions a couple of years ago, and now their stock has just plummeted. The players have lost form, and they're just fighting and trying. You can hear it in Fergal Logan's voice after the game. They're just sort of exasperated now at this stage. They just can't get anything going, and it's hard to make a case for them to really feature later in the summer.
Colin, from a Galway perspective, you know, their schedule throughout the year, they got to the league final, they didn't win it, but they still had to play that week. And I know they didn't have to go out the week after against Roscommon like Mayo did, but then they did have to play Roscommon. They've won the Connacht title. Now they're in fighting on the All-Ireland front. Like, you know, is that going to be, could that tell in a negative sense towards the end of the year, like having to go for a few different competitions earlier on? Because you made the same point with Mayo and you said it could benefit them. Is the flip side potentially an issue for Galway later on?
It may be. I wouldn't like to preempt that. Well, I'd like to just see how it plays out. My suspicion is it will catch teams. Some of these schedules is going to catch teams. It's, you know, these games are attritional. You pick up injuries, and there's a, you know, getting yourself ready to play a game, and then, you know, you're on to the next game straight away. You're not getting time to pause, and you know, sometimes we forget that these are not professional players that hop on a plane and fly back to their base that night. They stay over. A lot of energy expended in a trip and just building yourself up for all of these games, and then you're heading back to work during the week. So, you know, the number of games against an amateur background, that all plays into it. Having said that, I think Galway are very, very comfortable and controlled in what they're doing in all their games. And again, I go back to the league, and when you combine the league and the championship, their average concession is 13 points. Now that's the path that Kerry tracked through league and championship last year, around the 13 point concession. And there's been good teams that played good teams. Obviously that includes in championship Roscommon, Tyrone and Sligo. They conceded 12, 12 and 13 points. And during the league, they've only conceded 3 goals, one against Roscommon, Armagh and Donegal. So they've shut out a lot of good teams in this league. They're very, very defensively solid. I think last Saturday they'll be very happy that Conor Gleeson, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the goalkeepers and Bernard Power, is he the better option? And does Conor Gleeson give you that solidity? I think if you're looking at last Saturday, he does. And I think players like Paul Conroy, when you see that energy that he brought, and, you know, he's one of the longest serving players around, and yet he's still showing, bringing that leadership. They have so many leaders. Galway, Sean Kelly, Damien Comer, obviously Paul Conroy, and then you see Killian McDade is coming back into form. And, you know, you look at Cathal Sweeney coming on and the impact he made. They've like Mayo, they're bringing a really deep squad to all of these games. So long term, maybe they do have the squad to be able to cope with what's ahead. But I think they're playing a little bit within themselves yet, and they're playing that control game. There's a lot of lateral ball. They're quite happy to play that way, and they seem to be very comfortable with it, and their concession rate is so low that it looks like potential All-Ireland finalists again, or All-Ireland champions maybe this time. They are at that level.
Yeah, and what I like about them, Colm, is yes, they do play a wee bit more of a controlled game, say, by comparison to say their neighbours Mayo, who are a wee bit more sort of ad hoc and off the front foot and always a bit chaotic, and that's what Mayo need. They're very controlled, but when they need to inject pace, I think they've got players there, the likes of Kelly and Daly in the back, that they can go hard and go fast. They sort of know when to sort of inject a wee bit of intensity and a wee bit of pace through the middle. Walsh, Comer, that bit of power, you know, where you see an awful lot of teams, they all just get stuck into this very passive style of play. Galway, they might do it for a couple of minutes and then they'll cut through on their big players because they have that physicality and pace and athleticism. You're seeing it as well with McDade bursting through off the shoulder for a few points. Just that bit of power, very hard to mark. But again, you know, we talk about Kerry not really bringing much to the party compared to last year, whereas Galway, whilst they weren't new players, they were older players that had gone off the scene in terms of Cook and Ian Burke, and they have just slipped in. There's two really good players. They're now starting players that have added to the panel. Like two players, they were narrowly defeated All-Ireland champions last year, and they've added two quality now starting players to that panel. That's a massive injection to any panel over a given year. It's not two young lads that are just sort of cutting their teeth. They're adding value straight away. Like Ian Burke's a former All-Star winner, and he has something a little bit different up front, a bit of creativity that complements the boys around them. So I just think again, bar disaster, I struggle to see anybody beating Galway unless they beat themselves. They just don't turn up or they get a raft of unlucky injuries, because everything just seems... And I'm just looking at their schedule here as well. They have a very favourable draw, I would say, in the knockout stages. Like, they have Armagh in the neutral venue. It's not like they have to go up and get into a sort of a very claustrophobic game in the Athletic Grounds, and they're getting Armagh after they have that type of a game in Oma against Tyrone. So things are just falling very, very nicely for Pádraig Joyce, to the point that the only thing he might be worried about, it's not too easy for them, because the next thing they're going to get probably is a big knockout game quarterfinal, and they don't want to be undercooked, because that Tyrone game should have been tougher for them than it probably was. And they could have it quite easy up until that quarterfinal point. That'd be the only fear I'd have for Galway. But you know, we're picking holes in what is otherwise a very, very, you know, formidable team at the minute.
You mentioned the changes Galway have made. I think it was for the Roscommon game. I think they had 10 of the 15 All Ireland final starters from last year. But you look at Mayo, the change is remarkable with Mayo from last year, in that there was only six players that started the quarterfinal last year against Kerry, started this weekend again. So it just shows what Kevin McStay and Pádraig Joyce, the depth that they are bringing to their squad and the range that they're bringing and the choices that is now available to the choices that are available to both Mayo and Galway. And it really puts them both in a strong position over the next few weeks. They have a lot of options, great range.
And Colm, just on Tyrone, what's your assessment of where they are in the All-Ireland race? I think they've lost their last four championship games, which is, you know, you'd associate that with maybe a Division 4 team, that sort of form line, not a team that were coming off at the time an All-Ireland title win. Are they realistic contenders for you, or are they just kind of going to be maybe getting a win against Armagh? They might get to the quarterfinals, but that will probably be as far as they go. What's your take?
Historically, there probably isn't another county that could lose three championship games and end up as All-Ireland finalists or All-Ireland champions. That's historically, they can come from nowhere to win an All-Ireland title. They showed that certainly in 2008 when they came through the back door. But I don't think it's in this team. We go back to this, some of the leading lights in 2021 who really hit heights that maybe a lot of us didn't think it was in them, they've dipped back since then. If you take the case of Player of the Year, then Kieran McGeary, he was very, very good that year, and he has struggled since. And even Conor Myler and Niall Sludden, players like that, they just aren't at the same pitch that they were. For sure, Derek Hanavan and Con Kilpatrick have come through stronger since then, but I think there's a bit of wear and tear in areas in Tyrone that they haven't been able to patch up or replace. I just don't sense that they're as driven as they were, and they just can't summon it. I obviously they have Armagh in the next round at home. That's a decent advantage to them, but Armagh are probably going to be coming in off the back of a win over Westmeath, so that will pick them up from the Ulster final, and obviously that will dictate a lot of where these teams go.
Yeah, Dick, what did you make of some of the decisions? You know, the red card for Tyrone, the black card for Noah Morgan. I know Fergal Logan didn't seem to be too happy after the game. Do you think they were the right calls?
The red card was, you know, and speaking as somebody who probably was guilty of a few of those types of challenges back in the day, but nowadays the lines have been fairly drawn now in terms of anything that's dangerous towards the head. You know, it shouldn't be really a decision for the referee, and it was dangerous. There's an onus on the tackler, if you want to call it, to behave in a way that's not dangerous to the opponent, and you couldn't make that argument for Frank. He went in very strong, and it was high, and he probably knew what he was doing, and he knew the minute he hit him. He just knew. He knew the reaction. There was no, you know, yes, he was pleading for leniency, but he knew it was a bad tackle, and I don't think anyone could make a case for that. And by all accounts, Glynn had to be taken off, and you know, we'll be feeling a wee bit worse for wear today over the head of it. The black card was interesting. You know, we haven't seen too many examples. This is Niall Morgan's black card after he remonstrated for a bad tackle. A couple of things around that, right? I've been a long time, you know, hater on the black card for various reasons because of his inconsistency of application. And now here's another element been thrown in. Number one, the initial tackle by the Galway player, Colin will correct me, I just can't remember who did it, the bad tackle around the neck of a Tyrone player. That got a yellow card, right? And this, we see this all the time now. This that you can actually pull a player by the neck or by the jersey and pull them down. 100% cynical, but it's technically not a black card. And for some God knows reason, that's not deemed a black card offence, right? So that's one thing that is a complete anomaly in the black card that somebody needs to really tidy up very, very quickly, because it's an awful example. Now, Niall Morgan's remonstrating with David Goff, got him a black card. Now, that's technically, and always has been from day one, not just with the referee, but with opposing players, but it's never been enforced. I think that'll not be the last time you see that this year. That's my sense on it. Just with all the issues with refereeing, and we've seen this in the past, Colin, that certain things are, you know, set as an agenda item for referees to focus on, and you see them focusing on it, that at some stage the culture has to change around referees and the way players and mentors and even the crowd speak to referees. And this is a tool in the referee's armory to counter that. End of story. And he says, if you want to speak to me like that, fine. You can go and sit in the stand and think about it for 10 minutes. And that's the card marked. So, you know, I was disappointed with Lee Keegan and Enda McGinn the other night, when all they could sort of do was compare, this happens before and it was never done. That's again the old lazy excuse for getting a speeding ticket. Abishu, man up the road was flying. He didn't get caught. It was a black card offence by the rules, and it will be going forward. So players need to know now that there are lines you cannot cross. Yes, we all throw our hands up. Yes, we all have that instinctive reaction to a free given against us, but there's a line that you don't cross. And David Goff felt Niall Morgan crossed it, and players will probably need to be mindful of that going forward. And I think it is something we have to sort of commend, because we do need a culture change around referees, and maybe that's the start of it. It'll be interesting to see, do we see more? I don't know, what do you think, Colin?
Just one point is to deal with the pulling of the jersey first, and how that, you know, the difference, Dick, with the, you know, you pull a jersey and you stop somebody and it's only a tick. That's all it is. And yet the leap to a black card where you pull somebody down, they're still cynical, they're still deliberate, and they're still preventing play. So there's a huge gap in that rule there between a tick for a jersey pull and a black card for pulling someone down or for obstruction or whatever it is. So that does have to be addressed. And maybe it's time to make a jersey pull fully, not a second one, but to make a jersey pull, a deliberate jersey pull, part of the black card rulings as well. On the issue of remonstrating aggressively with a referee, that's one of the five fouls, shall we say, under black card as well. Rarely used, but of all the referees that I would say that would use them, David Goff would apply that probably more rigorously than anybody else. just as he is a stickler for the gum shields too. So some of those small print offences that people dismiss as not being very much, David Goff will always pursue them because they're in the rules and he will apply them in that way. And I think there is certainly something around players congregating around a referee or umpires when they're making the decision, going right into them, trying to influence them. I think maybe that should be part of it as well. It shouldn't be, just shouldn't be tolerated, really. And a few years ago, I was at Congress and one of the clubs, I forget when it was, wanted to bring in a rule whereby only the captains could speak to a referee. I thought it was a practical solution for maybe a bit of dialogue between players rather than have a crowd around. If the captain wants to speak, it applies in rugby, obviously, but it barely got a hearing. It was barely discussed. It was dismissed. It was beaten in the vote. I think it's something that could be revisited to allow for some line of communication rather than have a group of players, or in the case of Niall Morgan, coming up and shouting and whatever else. I don't know what was said, obviously, but it was obviously enough for David Goff to make that decision. And if there is a case for it, I think maybe Croke Park or the referees body should communicate that from now on, we're drawing a line, and anybody that comes up, we will be enforcing that rule as part of the black card as much as any of the others.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was at the Ulster, which was probably the game of the weekend, the Ulster Minor semi-final on Saturday evening, Monaghan beat Tyrone. And I'm sorry I can't remember the referee's name. I'm going to try and find it. Maybe you know off the top of your head, Cogby, you're better with names than me. But it was an exceptional refereeing performance. And he got so many calls right. But even at that, he had to listen to crap from both sets of management teams. He actually went over and he had to book both mentors and send them off. And I couldn't have seen of how he could referee the game better. And yeah, he still had to do that. And again, I'd say he was basically just saying to himself, listen, lads, I'm not here to listen to this. And you know the type, boy, just constantly on the line, every decision going at them. And I said, there has to come a time that has to stop, because it's just the norm. And we're trying to talk about it at underage level. I'm a coach at under-11s, and you're trying to manage it. You know, you have to be able to see it at the senior games and the provincial games that you go to. And so I think you're going to probably see more of this. And referees just saying, sorry, no, lads, we're not, I can't get every call right, but I don't have to listen to abuse from you. And they're gonna have a step in. Niall Morgan suffered it, and Tyrone ultimately suffered it at the weekend. And more teams are probably going for it. And rightly so, because we all have to do better.
Just as an aside there, I was at the Cork and Clare game yesterday. And now, according to my notes, there was one yellow card, Conor Cleary. I just haven't got them here. But from memory, there was one yellow card, Conor Cleary, but there was actually three yellow cards in the game because a Muir Ishka and a Hurley carrier were also booked. So if I'm not mistaken, there were more non-players booked in Ennis yesterday than there was actual players booked. So there is a little bit of lawlessness. I won't say lawlessness, that's not the right word, but you will often get more activity and more indiscipline around the sidelines, or people preparing to step over the line with regard to rules and regulations, almost off the pitch these days than you're getting on it.
Yeah.
And one thing, it wasn't a black card offence, but I did think Niall Morgan was very fortunate not to get sanctioned for that high ball he caught and led with his foot in what I thought was a very dangerous manner, but he didn't get booked for that. And a minute later, got a black card for a different offence, which I thought was ironic. Maybe he dodged a bullet in one sense, but then didn't get away with another one. The other two games of the weekend, Dick, we had Donegal beating Clare. It feels a long time ago now that Donegal was kind of the story of the GA season with how they were going, but obviously a great victory for them. And then Kildare Sligo yesterday, you know, we were talking about Kildare a lot in recent weeks after their performance against Dublin, coming up short, but giving a good account of themselves. And then, you know, drawing with Sligo yesterday would be very disappointing for Glen Ryan.
Yeah, interesting that. And you're going to have a few more games like that in the new competition structure, that sort of, because there's so many games, it'll not get a whole pile of focus. The next thing, the result will pop its head and be going, oh, right, good, Sligo. Because you remember the conversations a couple of weeks ago after, you know, Sligo took the hammer and in Connacht, this is what business are they going into an All-Ireland series. And I think if I'm right, I'm on record saying they'll compete okay. I saw enough in that performance in the Connacht final that they should be able to compete okay, and they will trouble some teams, and they've done that. They competed against Kildare, who we know, many times we said it now, you just don't know what you're going to get with Kildare after all the sort of optimism they might have brought from that Dublin game, the way they sort of could have beat Dublin to going up there. I say Glenn Ryan just doesn't know where to look at this stage. At this stage he may have quit training, just bring the boys up and see what you're going to get with them. Let them off the bus and pick 15, because for all the preparation and training that's going into their teams, you just don't know what you're going to get from them when you put them out on the pitch. And this weekend there's no difference. So I think for the argument for those maybe three or four teams that will find themselves every year getting into the top 16 competition, that they've no business been there. I think that's a shot in the arm for that. I says they can compete. Now they could probably take a licking in another game, but so be it. That happens in every competition. So that was good for Sligo, it was good for the competition. You'd be a bit worried though, like was it 2,500 people at that game? Kildare generally support their teams well. You'd like to think, Jesus, Sligo, after all the good vibes coming from the underage teams, is a wee bit more there in Sligo football to go out and support their senior players in their home game. But maybe, listen, you can't force people to go and watch games. There's a lot of stuff going on at the weekend in other sports, but you know, you don't want to see these low attendances now at these games either. Yes, there's a big crowd in Killarney for Mayo and Kerry. You'd like to see a bit of travelling support for these games as well. So again, it was great for Sligo. That'll be enough for them in this series, that they went up, they competed, and they didn't just get three heavy defeats. Kildare, I don't know, where did they go after this? They still could find themselves getting through the group. They could still put up a decent showing against a knockout team. But hey, you'd be a good man to put any good money on them.
I suppose on the point of the Sligo crowd, they've had eight league games, obviously with the final. They had three in the Connacht Championship. They've had another one now against Kildare. And they had five, which are big games at under 20 level, against Roscommon, Mayo, Galway, Kerry, and an All-Ireland final against Kildare. Sligo's a small county. It's a lot of expense. And I just wonder, you know, and obviously the one is supported, two competitions there, under 20 and senior, supported by Connacht Council. The other are supported by Central Council. Maybe it's time to think about, obviously there's a season ticket there, but to expand it into these qualifier games, because there are so many, and reward loyalty with a cheaper price for some of these games to make it more accessible, so that crowds will get out. I'd say maybe more disappointing is the fact that the Kildare support was down, but they too have had an extensive under 20 campaign that brought them to the final. So if you're a Kildare supporter, a loyal Kildare supporter, or Sligo, there's been a lot of activity in recent times. Or maybe it's the fact that, well, there isn't much jeopardy here, so we'll sit it out and we'll wait for the Dublin game, or we will wait for the Roscommon game at a neutral venue. There may have been a bit of that for Kildare. But yeah, a disappointing crowd. And Kerry Mayo was down around 8,000 or 9,000 from where it was. Now, obviously, a Saturday afternoon, but it's one to watch. And yet, Central Council approved a set of figures for the league over the weekend. Record revenues, attendances and revenues were up. My understanding is they're up to around 7 million from 5.6. five or something like that. So that's a huge leap for the league. So obviously it takes a bit of analysis to see where all of this is going to be able to derive. Well, what's the best packages and what are the best formats for crowds?
Yeah, agreed.
Just before we finish up, Dick, a quick look to next weekend. You know, the other set of teams entering the All-Ireland Round Robin Series, you have Dublin, Roscommon, Armagh, Westmeath, Louth, Cork, Derry, Monaghan, you know, various degrees of, you know, bigger matches and some of the smaller ones. What's jumping out to you? I'm sure the Monaghan game, obviously, but, you know, what are your thoughts ahead of next weekend?
Yeah, we're talking about Saturday afternoon, so somebody's wisdom to fix the Dublin or the Monaghan Derry game for 7 o'clock in Derry City. So yeah, so it could be 1 o'clock in the morning before I get home next weekend. So I don't know if that's going to help the crowd in Celtic Park. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think we're Monaghan people are very sort of despondent after the Ulster semi-final, really didn't perform, and Derry looks streets ahead. Now, with everything that's gone on in Derry over the last couple of weeks, the tough game against Armagh, will they be a wee bit more vulnerable, or will they be looking to bounce back and really sort of, not bounce back, but really sort of try and further all of that controversy behind them? You know, they were obviously delighted to get the Ulster final win and they want to kick on, but at the same time, they were in terms of an All-Ireland team, you know, that conversation, they didn't look like that in the Ulster final against Armagh compared to what else we're looking. So Derry, you know, if they have it in the legs and the energy still in the panel, all things considered, they might be looking to sort of kick on now and sort of put all the Rory Gallagher controversy behind them and kick on. And Monaghan, you know, will need to bring an awful lot more than they did the last day and to not get a similar, you know, trouncing basically is what they got in Omagh. So I'm hoping from a Monaghan point of view that they can bring more and to compete more. It'd be a tough ask to get anything out of that game, but here's hoping. Dublin Roscommon, I think, you know, Roscommon over the last sort of half a dozen years, Colm, if you might agree with me, for all their huffing and puffing and they got an odd Connacht title and they come up and down, and every so often when they got an opportunity to put it up to a big team at sort of quarterfinal stage, they just fell back, or super eights, they never really were able to push on. You know, they've an opportunity now before that sort of group of players get a wee bit too far gone to really, you know, take a big scalp. And where Dublin are at, I think the Louth game, I don't think they're as good as that. I don't think Louth equally are as bad as that, but let's not put too much in ours. I think there's an opportunity for Roscommon to take a scalp there. You know, like they put in a credible Division One campaign. You know, they got to, you know, Connacht final. They should be going up saying, you know, we can take a Dublin scalp here. Like, put it this, if there's double digits between Roscommon and Dublin there, you know, Roscommon have no excuses for that. You know, they should be better than that. That this should be a competitive game, all things being equal. Although we've got Dublin completely wrong and they're far further down the tracks than we've actually seen, but I don't think they are. So I'd be really interested to see where that is in terms of a benchmark for Dublin and equally Roscommon. Are they really a serious team now? For all they've done and talked about in both Division 1 and the province to date. So I'd be really interested to see how that game goes.
Yeah, Colm, I'll give you the last word then. Anything about next weekend, like from what Dick said, or your own thoughts that's kind of jumping out to you?
What I said about Mayo earlier and what I've maintained about Mayo is that the pause away from games will serve them well. And I think it'll certainly blunt Derry in some way, coming down from the high of a penalties win against Armagh, the Ulster final, and with everything that's been going on, you know, and with the constantly getting up for these games, I think it will catch them somewhere. I think it will certainly bring this game a lot closer than what the Ulster semi-final was. I'd have no doubt about that the scoreline will be a lot less. The thing about Derry is, and I said it about Galway, they have a lot of leaders, and you could see that in the Ulster final. I mean, Conor Glass especially, but also Brendan Rodgers, and obviously Chrissy McCabe. They have a lot of big figures who will be able to carry the team over what they have experienced in the build-up and obviously in the aftermath of the Ulster final. And I think that leadership is set in stone, which will be able to help them over those bumps. But I do think Monaghan will be a lot closer. I think there's an imperative on Roscommon to go and perform against Dublin, because as Dick referenced, they've had a bad record against Dublin in the Super 8s in there and in the league game that they played a few years back as well in Croke Park. It hasn't gone well for them. Obviously they beat Mayo, but then lost to Galway, and I feel they're a bit off in that, even though they led early on and they did put it up to Galway. So there is an imperative in Croke Park for Roscommon to compete and make themselves harder to beat than they have been in those games. Now, a lot of the players who are playing this weekend were involved in those games too. That's a very experienced Roscommon team, and some of the players been in the Dailies and the Smiths and the Murthas. They've been around a long time. They're not an up-and-coming team. They're a team that is there, and it really is time to step up for them and to make it as competitive as possible. I do think Dublin are a bit ahead of Roscommon, obviously a good bit ahead, but this is about Roscommon competing and competing hard. I think the longer the season goes on, I do think Dublin are going to improve. But
well, set it to be an exciting weekend next weekend. For the moment, I'd like to thank Dick and Colm for joining me on this week's episode of the Throwin' Football Podcast. We'll be back next week with another show looking back on all the action. And in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.